Before we start today's sermon, let us all bring our palms together to make our veneration to the perfect one, to the undefeated one, the unvanquished one, the infinitely compassionate one, the supremely enlightened one. He is the fountain of all wisdom, who attained the supreme bliss of Nibbana without the support of anyone else. Without him, there would be no one to guide us. To that remarkable feat, we make our veneration today, while having the privilege and honor to follow his footsteps steadfastly, with clarity towards the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, which lies clearly set in front of us, thanks to the great master and all the teachers who followed him since. While having that in mind, let us also remind ourselves that this is not a mere token of respect, but also a moment to revive our pledge of allegiance to the Noble Triple Gem, reminding ourselves that the Buddha represents the ultimate destination, the Dhamma the path, the Sangha the practice. While having all this in our minds, let us prepare ourselves to chant the Namaskara, to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, observe the precepts, and to commence today's proceedings. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Why do you all look so sad? As if some good thing has come to an end? Isn't it obvious? I can see through your faces that clenching hearts in agony. Yes, it is obvious. It has created a space in your heart which is not fillable by through just my words. But I will explain the cause of his absence. It is none other than our venerable Nayaka Thero. So, as you know, he is our Nayaka Thero in our monastery. Most of the time he is very busy with plenty of the tasks and duties and responsibilities towards the sasana, towards the upliftment of all of us. So there are times where our Guru Thero is not with us, when he goes and lend his hand to our brothers and sisters who live abroad. And by that time, our Nayaka Thero becomes super busy because all the duties will be held by him. Therefore, as you all know, I think, from some time ago, there was a meditational retreat program for the monks which happened in Mattegoda Meditation Center. That is available for all of our monks, but except for our Nayaka Thero. not accept, but he on many occasions he has visited there and conducted and done meditation there, but he has never missed you all. On Sundays, you always come and do this sermon. But it's quite rarely that he gets the full opportunity to be in this meditational retreat. Therefore, a group of monks noticed this, and we went to him and requested that we would like to give you that opportunity, especially the Sangha Sabha, the Sangha Council of our monastery. So they were very happy to divide his responsibilities among them, and all of those responsibilities were divided among them or were delegated to them. And another group of monks, including myself, went unto him and requested, "We would like to give you the full opportunity of having the full retreat." So with that good intention in my heart, in our hearts, we requested that, and to my benefit, I got this opportunity. But if I had seen your sad faces back then, I wouldn't have even thought of doing it. I'm just kidding. I know how much you miss him. As much as we do, we all do. He's like the fountain of love and compassion. Isn't it? To me, it's like that. I don't know for you all. It's needless to say. Therefore, for the time being, please bear with me. Okay. And to start with, I have two special announcements to make. So before I forget this, so I will start today's discussion or the sermon with that. Actually, our Nayaka Thero wanted me to tell this to you all, since he's not going to visit you all. This is a special invitation to all Dharmishtha Rajagiriyans. So there are going to be two special events. On the 2nd of August and on the 4th of August. He wanted me to inform you all to make those two dates, or at least one day, according to your possibilities and availabilities, available to come and enroll yourself and engage yourself to this meritorious deed. So there will be offerings to the Mahasangha. The Mahasangha who come from all four directions, as you all know, that is super meritorious. So on the 2nd of August, there will be an offering of a granary of rice that you all have contributed. And with immense joy in your hearts and minds, you can come and rejoice in this super meritorious deed. Do you know why? In the 600 or so years to come, the Mahasangha who come from all four directions will be nourished from this. Therefore, keep that day reserved and come and rejoice in that hugely meritorious deed. And also on that day, another offering will be offered for the benefit of the Mahasangha, which will be a rice mill. And the venue will be in Dambulla, in the Dambulla Green Farm, which is located in a quite distant away. And it is just, I think, about 15 minutes drive away from the Dambulla Rajamahavihar. So, and you, I think your the event starts at 9 a.m. So you can arrive there by that time. And there will be a full program within the day. And also, it includes a sermon by our Venerable Guru Thero. So it comprises with the offerings of the granary of rice and the rice mill. And there will be Buddha Puja and alms offerings, and then the sermon by our Venerable Guru Thero. I'm sure it will be a remarkable sermon, because it's going to be a remarkable offering, which is going to last for a long period of time. So that is going to happen on when? The 2nd of August. And that is on Sunday. So the Sunday's usual sermon at Gateway College will not happen on that day. Then you are the special group to be invited on that occasion. And on the 4th of August, so that will be on Tuesday, I think, is there will be another offering. If you can remember, there were a group of people, or two people, who came on the day that Guru Thero arrived to this very venue, and they offered a land, a paddy field, for the benefit of the Mahasangha. And this will be taken for the benefit of the Mahasangha officially with the contribution of you all, because it's a donation from you all. And you can come and rejoice in that meritorious deed as well. So there will be offering of a paddy field and also plantation of breadfruit trees. So I think the organizers of this event is trying their best to give you each and every one of you all the chance of planting a breadfruit tree, which will be ripened and bear fruits for the benefit of the Mahasangha. Who are the Mahasangha? All of us. Bhikkhu Bhikkhuni Upasaka Upasika. That is the Sangha in this sasana. Therefore, those trees will ripe and bear fruits, and countless people will benefit from it. And those people will have just one aim, like you all, for the practice of the path, or to seek the truth. What is the truth of this world? And the sasana is the best place to invest. Therefore, keep those two dates reserved. And also in that event as well, there will be a short discourse done by our Venerable Guru Thero. And that, I forgot to inform you about the venue. And that will be in Andigama, in Chilam. I think those places will be shared within the WhatsApp group, right? So you will be informed about the exact locations. And if you are interested, you can book your appointment and give your names. because for the benefit of the organizers, it's much easier for them to organize things and get things in order. Therefore, you can give your names to our Madam Tusita and keep those 2 days reserved. Okay. Can you see the benefit of being among the noble companions? You get plenty of opportunities to engage in merits. Not just merits. Since we cannot see the power of these merits, someone can say or someone can doubt, those are just mere actions. But only after you see the result of them, you see the power of it. How can you experience the result of merits? Let's just say, let's take an example, right? When we didn't have the noble companions, in this life itself I'm talking about, what is the natural inclination of our mind? To do merits? Is that the natural inclination? So the mind is naturally inclined to release its pressure through the easiest path, right? Through the path that has the least resistance, it releases the pressure. So it doesn't have the wisdom to choose what is right from wrong, right? So it just chooses the least resistant path. What do you think the least resistant path is? So there are 3 ways of doing abhisankar, right? Punya abhisankar, apunya abhisankar, and anijja abhisankar. So let's keep anijja abhisankar aside, because that only happens when you are in deep meditation, right? So apunya abhisankar and punya abhisankar, or in other words, merits and demerits. Sorry, apunya abhisankar is demerits and punya abhisankar is merits. So what is the least resistant path? Yes, needless to say, apunya abhisankar is much easier. In fact, that is one feature of it to identify whether that's an apunya abhisankar or punya abhisankar. If something is very easy to say, if easy to do or easy to say or easy to think, that is very likely to be an apunya abhisankar. If something is very hard to do, hard to say, hard to think, that is one quality of punya abhisankar. But if you are used to do merits, the merits that you are used to do will also become somewhat easy. That doesn't mean that it is an apunya abhisankar by that time, right? So anything that you do with a pure intention in your mind will be a merit. It will be a punya abhisankar. So it is the intention what makes the karma, as you know. Chetanaham bhikkave kammam vada. Therefore, even in our current lifetime, when we didn't have the noble companionship, the mind was naturally inclined to do what is wrong. The mind didn't know that it was wrong. The mind just wanted to release its pressure. So whatever the way that it meets up with. Therefore, can you think about the countless lifetimes throughout the entirety of samsara? What will be the percentage of lifetimes that we had the association of the noble ones? What do you think? Like 50%? What do you think? Let's say about then 20%. No? What about 10% then? Still no. And what about 1%? Still no? Yes, you're very correct. Having the association of noble ones is extremely rare. How rare it is. It is inexplicably rare. Therefore, through those rare occurrences, we have come to the association. We have met the noble ones, and we have, and they have, those noble ones have induced us, or they have kind of, with a very compelling words, like our teachers do, right? They have compelled us to engage in merits, like our Guru Thero, like our Nayaka Thero, right? We all have changed our lives through their words. Otherwise, you and I know where we were heading. Therefore, through their compelling words, we changed our views. Or the change happened. It took its natural route. With those changed views, now we are so blessed to have got those views, because those views facilitate us to engage in merits even more. Do you know how hard was it to engage in merits in the beginning? Because with those views that we had, I mean, no one to be blamed. The society is not to be blamed, because that's how the causes come into place. When the causes line up, an effect manifests, as you know. Therefore, with those attitudes or the beliefs or views that we used to have, and what we have got through the ones that we have associated, it was very difficult to engage in merits. But since the views got changed, now it was a cup of tea, wasn't it? Engaging in merits is not a big deal. Isn't that what happened to you and I? That is what changed our minds. That is what changed our lives entirely. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, I want you all to reflect. So through the entirety of samsara, can you imagine about the proportion of the demerits and the merits that we have acquired? What is more and what is less? What do you think? Do I even have to explain about it? The demerits that we have acquired is much more and even unfathomable. Therefore, what I want you to focus here is, the amount of merits is very limited, isn't it? It's very limited. So what's happening right now? Are you suffering? You're benefiting. You're actually kind of enjoying. You're looking forward for this moment to happen. I mean, not again with me, but with Nayaka Thero, right? But anyway, you're looking forward, and you like to engage in merits, and you like to listen to the Dhamma. Therefore, this is a result of the merits that you have acquired. Throughout your life as a human, you harvest and you consume the merits that you have acquired. Do you understand the gravity of this? You're making use of the most limited resource in the entirety of samsara. Merit is like it's very limited, right? It's even rarer to be found. Even rarer than, I think, titanium. I'm just giving an example, right? But you are making use of the merits each second, each moment as you speak, each mind. Can you imagine of the gravity? We consume one mind at a time, and each mind is a result of a huge merit that we have acquired in the entirety of samsara. The evidence to prove that we have acquired a huge merit is this moment, this chitta. This chitta itself is the proof to prove that you have no idea of how much merit that you have acquired, and that is the that limited resource. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, that is why we have to be wise enough to engage and to fill this reservoir of merit, because it is being consumed as we speak. It is not like a fixed reservoir. It's not filled always. It's being consumed in a very larger scale, because we are amidst of the noble ones, and the association of noble one itself is the most costly thing ever. Therefore, that is why it's like a very high turnover. You have the potential to engage in supreme merits, super merits, as well as you have no control of the consumption, because just by the association of each and every one of you all, because you give noble companionship to each and everyone, that is what creates the unity among you all. Therefore, each and every one of you are individually blessed to have the companionship of you all, and of the Mahasangha, and of our teachers. And each time that we have that association, we consume our merits in a rate that we cannot even imagine. So that is why our teachers always encourage us to engage in merits. Not only you. That includes even us, the monks. Respective of how senior you are, it has to be my individual responsibility upon myself. I have to engage in enough merits, because otherwise this engine will not have enough fuel to run. It's fueled through merits. So without that fuel, this engine is going to stop. Therefore, the proof is right in this moment. You're super meritorious. That is why we had to make a special invitation for the Devas and the Brahmas. Why? They are not blessed like you all. They had to be invited separately. Although they deserve of this moment, they had to be invited. But you all invited us. Right? Not me again. You invited Nayaka Thero, but I didn't know exactly that you will be this sad. Okay, with that, we will try to look into the truths of this world And I'm sure with last sermon that our Nayaka Thero revealed, oh, tell me about it. Right? Have you ever thought of the five precepts in that way? Neither have I. So that is our, that is the blessing, isn't it? To see the exactly the same world in a different lens. But actually, it reveals a massive part of the deception of this world. The world that we live in is a complete deception. But when we get out of that deception, the world will not change. What changes will be the way that we interpret it. For example, if you see a mirage, right? There's no other way of saying it. I mean, right? A person who doesn't know about a mirage will not say that I see a mirage. They will say that as, oh, I see a nice pool of water, right? Just because they don't know what is a mirage. And light behaves in this particular way to formulate an illusion of a pool of water. But although they won't say that it's a mirage, but they see the mirage, right? The phenomenon of mirage is true. That really happens. So those of you who have learned in physics, light is reflected through the surface of a hot surface. So that is the cause of this phenomenon. Therefore, the reflection of the clouds will be seen on the hot surface, as if it is reflected through a pool of water. Therefore, a mirage is observed and experienced. And someone who doesn't know about this phenomenon will say that, oh, there's a nice pool of water. And they will try to do various things. Because there's a pool of water out there, so why do I have to carry all this burden? Why do I have to fill my bottles with water? It will be very heavy and I don't have to do that. So they will try to empty their bottles. So usually these mirages occur in deserts or in hot, very hot roads. Therefore, if you don't know what is the true mechanism of this occurrence, they will try to do various things that they are not supposed to do. But they don't know that they're not aware of this. But when you come out of this deception, when you know that it's a mirage, will the mirage change and will it disappear? No, you will still see the same, exactly the same manifestation will happen. What changed actually? Exactly. The way how you interpreted the you saw a sight. The sight didn't change. It was exactly the same. It is exactly the same. The same way that you see. But what got changed is how you interpret it. Since you know that it's a mirage, now you are not trying to empty your bottles. You know that you are in the middle of a desert. And you know that it's a deception. Therefore, you know what to do. You're mindfully aware. So likewise, when you come out of the deception will, I mean, nothing will happen to the deception. It will be the same as it used to be. So these are the five levels of deception. These five precepts denote the five levels of deception. So, in the beginning, I think all of you can remember, and it is nothing to be forgotten, about the pleasure, the mechanism of pleasure. I think that's the first level of deception, which is the minds are deceived of a separate entity called pleasure. Pleasure is out there in the world. That is what we all believed. Or if there's someone who is new to these sermons, they will also say that, of course, pleasure is out there. Even if you have been exposed to this concept that pleasure is a process or it's a result of causes, the natural inclination of the mind is to grasp pleasure as an entity or as something that which exists in this world. So when this happens, the result of this interpretation happens then and there. So what happens if a mirage is interpreted as a pool of water? Then you will empty your bottles. Likewise, when pleasure is interpreted as something that which exists out there in the world, what will happen? Attachment will happen. Then and there. That is why, ladies and gentlemen, can you think of something or some, there's no other way to say this, some entity, although you know that there are no entities in this world, you feel them, you feel so. Think of a person or a thing, an ornament or whatever, or a food that gives you a plenty amount of pleasure, right? Can you have the control over yourself to prevent attachment from happening? I don't like it. So attachment is liking, right? You know that. No, I don't like it. But if it gives you a huge amount of pleasure, right? Now, do you have control? Can you prevent yourself from liking it? Can you do that? If something gives you a lot of pleasure and you interpret it as pleasure? No. Why? Why did you like it? Have you seen some people ask from some others? Don't like it. Usually this doesn't come in the source of it, right? This comes in the way of people, right? Whenever, okay, let's not go there. It will be a sad story then. When people are attached to people, right? So sometimes some seniors, maybe our elders, advise us to stop that attachment, as if that we ourselves intentionally attached ourselves. Right? Can you have the control of that attachment? If you do, please tell me. Because you have discovered something new. In that sense, you are going to tell me that you are the creator of attachment. That I am the one who attaches. But according to the Lord Buddha's teachings, we know that attachment is an effect of causes. Where the causes manifest, the effect manifests. Is it delayed? How long does it take for the attachment to take place when there is the cause? How long will it take? A week or so? Instantly, in that instant, in that moment itself, when the causes are aligned, the effect manifests. In that moment itself. That is what we learn as anicca. Anicca, dukkha, and anatta. All of those qualities. The quality of manifestation. Right? Then, it doesn't take any time because it is timeless. One moment is timeless. If that is the truth of attachment, would you have any power of controlling your attachment? Ladies and gentlemen, this is the irony. This is the irony of you and our lives. We didn't know the mechanics of this mind. Therefore, we took it for granted. And we thought that we can have control over our desires. And we tried to control them, but failed. In the end, we kept ourselves saying that something that could make up our mind. And the life is filled with frustration, because there is a never-ending cycle. The more that you give to fulfill the desires, the greater it will get. Never satisfied. Hasn't it been the case always, all the time? Hasn't it proven to you that this cycle is a vicious cycle, a never-ending cycle? That is the futility of fulfilling this cycle. Because the more that you give, it's like the black hole, right? It sucks everything in. The desires of the mind is like that. So the more you want, the more you give. The more you give, even more you want. Then when do you become satisfied? At which point would you achieve the moment of satisfaction? But isn't it the very thing that you are looking for? So this is the deception of pleasure. That is the first level of deception. So when you have come out of that deception, will you feel pleasure in a different way? Will you feel it as, oh, what a lot of suffering is it? No, the deception will be the same. But the way that you interpret it will be totally different. Therefore, you will never attach. That's the way of saying it, right? It's not you who get attached to, right? Attachment will never take place. Although the deception of pleasure occurs. So while the pleasure manifests within the mind, attachment will never take place because you have come out of it. Once the realization has occurred that pleasure is nothing but a released amount of vexation or the pressure, or the stress, now you have the wisdom to view or to see pleasure as an amount of stress, as an amount of vexation or pressure. Can you remember the technique that we used to get our attention to focus on the truth? What is the first line of the stanza in the Ovada Padimokka of the Lord Buddha? Kanti paramang tapotidikka. This is the mere technique. And it has given guidance to my life on countless occasions. I'm sure it must have for you as well. So I will tell you what that means. What is kanti in this little stanza, on this little line? Kanti means, what is it? Patience, yes. Patience. Of course, let's say like that. Or toleration, one could say, right? What is to be tolerated? Why do you have to be patient? And what is the cause of to be patient or to tolerate? Exactly, right? So if there was no vexation, would you ever have to tolerate something? No. Now, first of all, to practice this, you have to identify a moment of vexation as vexation. Or if you are about to release a pressure within the mind, right? Now you have to identify, okay, this is a moment to, so just as I release this pressure, I'm going to experience pleasure. So at the verge of something, right? Can you remember the example that we used on those days in our Guru Thero's sermon? Just a moment before you take a spoonful of ice cream, can you hold it there just in front of your mouth and stay? What will the mind say? Not say, what will the mind scream, right? You can hear the scream of your own mind. It will be screaming through the bottom of its throat, right? Why? Because that is the manifestation of the vexation or the stress, the mental pressure. A pressurized mind works just as a pressure cooker. So just a moment before that you release the pressure, if you hold it so hard, that is very difficult. But if you do so, that this is called toleration or kanti. In fact, it is a perfection to be fulfilled. Kanti paramita. Right? In fact, it's a perfection. The more you do, the more it will be filled, and it will be, it's not like the wanting that we talked about last time, right? It's not unfulfillable. It is fillable. It is a perfection. It will be perfected. All the 10 perfections are not like endless and vicious cycles. They are fillable. Once they become filled, and it will bear a fruit, a noble fruit, which that you will never lose in the entirety of the samsara. So kanti is one of them among the 10 perfections. So when you do that, when you don't allow yourself to release the pressure, now something interesting happens within the mind. Why are you inclined to release the pressure? You have an objective. What is the objective to release the pressure? To find a solution to this problem, right? What is the problem now? What is the problem? Through your answers, I can see where you are in your contemplation. If you're focused on the truth, you will say the problem here is the vexation. But if you are not focused on the truth, you will say the problem here is I don't have the ice cream, right? So I can't experience the joy of having a melting ice cream within my mouth. So depending on where you're focused at, your answer will differ. So ask from your mind, what is the answer? And don't try to enforce the answers, right? Like you're spoon feeding your toddlers, right? They will vomit if you try to force feed them. Be natural. Be very honest with yourself. This self-honesty is super important. If you are very serious, because you are seeking for the truth, can you force feed the truth to the mind? You can never do that. If you try to do so, that truth will not go inside. So there's a nice example that our teachers say. When a cup is filled with water, when you try to pour some water into it, what will happen? The poured water will overflow. It will not go inside the cup. Why? Because it's already filled. So what do you have to do then? You have to empty the cup. Then only the water will be held within the cup. Likewise, the mind has to be ready to internalize the truth. The truth has to be established within the mind little by little. It will take its time. That is why our teachers always say, don't try to attain Nibbana all at once. Right? We are not in a hurry. None of us. And neither should you be. If you see someone who are at a, it's like a race to attain Nibbana, that is actually, they are highly motivated, and which is a very good thing, and which is not to be ridiculed or looked down upon, right? Because in there might have been certain phases in our experience, even all of us, our lives, you may have had this experience of being highly motivated, right? Hyper-stimulated, like electrons, right? You're highly motivated to attain Nibbana. I want to attain Nibbana today itself. Yes, like that. Right? And you're ready to smash everything. You're hyper-stimulated. Okay, so that's a phase. That's okay. We can bear with everyone like that. So, you cannot do like that because the cup is not empty and the mind is not ready to for the establishment of the truth, because something in the name of truth is already been established within the mind. Therefore, you have to allow some time. What is already established has to be proven to the mind as it's not the truth. And it will be emptied. Then only the mind will be ready and ripened to hold the truth. And thereby, a huge power of merit plays a huge role here, right? Not just a pure listening and engage. I mean, many things play a huge role, including a huge role in the merits. And the truth will be established little by little. So what should happen here is the focus of the mind has to be on the true nature of pleasure. What is the true nature of pleasure? So I imagine, right? Here I imagine that each and every one of you are well versed with the teachings. Right? So if there are newcomers, so just out of curiosity, are there any newcomers here? I don't think so. Okay, madam. So for the benefit of all the newcomers, let us revisit the cycle or the defilement process. Right? So when do we experience pleasure? It is when we experience some kind of stress. So when you have a headache, you take 2 pills of paracetamol, right? Then you have a huge relief, which is quite pleasurable. And how can you experience the same pleasure again? Shall we try taking another 2 pills of paracetamol? If 2 pills can give that amount of pleasure, what if we consume the whole card of it? Right? That is not how you experience pleasure. Pleasure is the stress or the pressure that is released in the mind. So the experiencing pleasure, it's not an experience that comes from outside, which is an external experience. That is a flawed interpretation. Pleasure is an effect the effect of releasing pleasure or reducing pleasure. It works, the mind works just as a pressure cooker. A pressurized mind just works just as a pressure cooker. When the pressure is at the threshold, it will release. The pressure cooker will release its pressure through a nozzle, making a hissing sound. Just as a pressure cooker releases its pressure, a pressurized mind, when it cannot bear its pressure, will release it through a mechanism which is known as abhisankar. When it does so, it creates a feeling or a perception. How does it feel like? It feels like pleasure. So pleasure, as far as a perception, is true. You really feel that perception. But does that perception mean that something get created within the mind? So as you can remember, there's another beautiful analogy to this pressure and pleasure example, phenomenon, which is the phenomenon of darkness. What is darkness? Darkness is absence of light. So, when light gets absent from somewhere, right? For example, just imagine that this room suddenly had a power cut. I hope it doesn't, right? Then this room will be, let's imagine that it's night, it's midnight. Then the whole room will be engulfed with pitch blackness or darkness. And someone of you will say that, oh, the room got dark. The room got dark, right? As if some darkness has entered to the room. But what happened was the light was lost. Did we insert darkness? Did we inject the room with darkness? No. So when the light reduces, it is perceived as darkness. Darkness is a mere perception which happens in our minds. But light is also a perception, but more than a perception, there is some energy which is out there in the physical world, which is emitted from a source. So these are sources of light. This is a source of light. All these electrical lights and maybe a lit candle or a lit lamp is a source of light. The sun itself is a source of light. So they emit light as an energy, in the form of energy. Can you see that energy? Right? Can you see the light energy? It's not the light energy that you see. But can't you see light? Of course, you see light, but it's not the energy which is emitted through the source of light. Can you see the subtle difference between those two? Right? It is so subtle. But that is different, right? Likewise, darkness is a perception, like the perception of light. But even if although light has a source of energy in the physical world, does darkness has a source of energy in the physical world? Will you be able to find darkness in the physical world? No, you won't. Is darkness matter or is darkness energy? What is darkness? All of them talk about darkness, but darkness is just a mere perception, which is perceived in the mind. So likewise, pleasure is just a mere perception, which happens in the mind. What is the reality of pleasure? What should really happen within the mind for the perception of pleasure to happen? This pressure or the vexation has to be released or reduced. Then only will the manifestation of or the perception of pleasure will manifest. Okay, so that is the reality. But when the mind is not focused on this reality, it will be focused on the pleasure as an entity. Once you are focused on the pleasure, all your reactions to it will be very entirely different. That is why, to the previous question that I asked from you all, the answer will be different on which you are focused at. If you are focused on the pleasure of the ice cream, the problem will be the lack of pleasure. Someone is preventing me my opportunity to enjoy the pleasure. That is the problem. Then how are you trying to solve it? Who is attempting? Who is trying to stop me from eating my ice cream? Now, you're going on a different path. But if you are focused on the truth, or if you are doing what the Lord Buddha has asked, the Lord Buddha has asked us to kanti. Not our teachers ask us to stop eating ice cream, right? None of our teachers have ever told us or admonishes us to do so. Our wisdom tell us to do so. Just with one intention. The intention of kanti or toleration is something completely different from other ways of tolerating. For example, have you heard about Attha Kila Mathana Yoga? Right? This is something very similar to this. You are not allowing yourself to indulge in pleasure. Why? So the difference is with the why or the intention or the purpose. If you don't know what the purpose is, you are just not allowing yourself to indulge in pleasure. So there's no end to it. There's no purpose to it. So then, there's no purpose actually. But here in toleration or in kanti, there's a clear purpose. The purpose here is to remove your focus from pleasure and to get back your focus on the truth. It allows us, it creates a very suitable environment for the mind to focus on the truth of pleasure. What is the truth of pleasure? It's vexation itself. Can you tolerate and not be pressurized, not be vexed? Tolerate and not be vexed? Can you do that? Then there's no purpose of tolerating, right? It's not called toleration. It's not called kanti then. What is to tolerate if there's no pressure? Because the pressure will manifest, or actually the pressure was there already. So what is the cause of vexation? What is the cause of vexation? Is it toleration? Toleration is not the cause of vexation. What is the cause of vexation? Attachment is the cause of vexation. So attachment was there within the mind. So what are we trying to do by tolerating? We're trying to emphasize, enhance its effects within the mind, because it is well hidden. That is the deception. We are trying to emphasize the hidden vexation within the mind. When the hidden vexation is well emphasized, now our purpose is fulfilled. Now there's no need of tolerating anymore. Now what do you have to do? You have to reflect. Tapo titikka. A good reflection has to happen from here onwards. Now, what is the reflection that should happen? What is this? What is this? Is this pleasure? So, what was my intention initially? to engage in pleasure, to have or experience a good amount of pleasure, to enjoy. That is why I started to eat this ice cream. By no means I'm not telling you that stop eating ice cream, okay? Have a plenty of ice cream with this reflection, right? Otherwise you will tell Nayaka Thero next time, see Swaminathan, the previous Swaminathan told us not to eat even ice cream. Okay. Then, toleration allows us to focus our mind on vexation rather than pleasure. When toleration happens, the vexation is emphasized, not that it gets created or it is an effect of toleration. Vexation is not an effect of toleration. Vexation is an effect of attachment. So, were you not attached before you tolerated? No, attachment was there. The technique here is to emphasize the hidden vexation. Now, with this technique, the vexation will be well manifested to the extent that you can feel it. Then you can reflect. So, is it going to be a pleasure or is it going to be the reduction or the release of this vexation? Because if you are not focused on vexation, can you reflect on this? If the mind was not focused on vexation, what is to be released? Yes, I was not vexed to begin with, but I enjoyed a good amount of pleasure. This is the natural focusing, because the vexation is well hidden under the deception of pleasure. Now you know why we tolerate and what is the purpose of toleration. The purpose of toleration is to unearth or to emphasize the hidden vexation, and when it is emphasized, go and have your ice cream while reflecting. Oh, it is this amount of vexation that was released. How vexatious this pleasure is. How pleasurable this pleasure is? No. How vexatious is this pleasure? Therefore, detachment will happen. Don't try to get detached from anything. You're not going to do it because you're not eligible to do that. The wisdom will do it. So let the wisdom do that. Let the wisdom do its job. But do your job. What is your job to be done? Tolerate and reflect. That's it. Just that. That is our job. That is what has been told or uttered by the Supreme Buddha. That is the technique. Now, that is the first level of deception. When you reflect on this, when you have got out of that deception, while experiencing pleasure, not enjoying pleasure, those are way too different, right? Not while enjoying pleasure, that means you are under the full deception. Without that, you can't enjoy, right? If you're enjoying something, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, right? Because when you're at home, if you're not surrounded by noble companions, and if you're serious about attaining Nibbana, that has to be applied, right? If you are serious, I don't know how you can be helped, because there's no one to help other than yourself. But if your mind is not also aware what is true and what is the deception, then that mind will be lost. A huge amount of merits will be wasted just in vain. That is just one mind, Swami Mahas. Isn't it? Just one mind. Can you revive it? Can you get it back? No. There's a huge waste. In our eyes, there's a huge waste. Waste of merits. Just one mind, Swami Mahas. But a waste of lifetimes of merits. That is why, from the heartfelt sincerity, I am telling this to you all. Have yourself surrounded with noble companions. Don't let that happen to your lives. But with one special condition, if you are serious, if you are serious about attaining the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. Because when you are surrounded with noble companions, because it's very natural when the mind is not mindfully aware, but the noble companions will remind you very compassionately. They will always remind you without hurting your feelings as well. That is what compassion is called, right? That is why you consider our Nayaka Thero, not you all, we all consider our Nayaka Thero as the fountain of compassion. Don't you feel so? Yes, that is why you consider that it's the natural. Because he shows the truth without feeling your, without hurting your feelings. So this is the true compassion. We experience it. And you all experience it. And you are so blessed to experience it. But if you are all by yourself, and if you cannot maintain this focus, then an unfortunate thing will happen, a huge waste. But let's not go there. Let's be very positive, right? Okay. So now you know that, now you are aware of the technique, and now you are aware of the first level of deception, which is pleasure. If you have come out of this deception, now there's no segregation of people or any even devas or brahmas for that matter. Before that, when you were focused on pleasure, you thought that there are grades of pleasure or the levels of comfort, right? That is why people get always upgrade themselves, right? There are upgrades of pleasure. It's really funny. Why does pleasure has to be upgraded always? Have you given it a thought? Why does your mobile phone has to be upgraded? Why does your computer has to be upgraded? Not even computers or the physical things, even softwares. Why do they have upgrades? Why do you have to update them? Tell me one thing that you don't update and use it forever. By no means I'm not insulting any of you, okay? Why? Because you become immune to a certain level of pleasure. Then it becomes not pleasurable anymore. Why does this happen? I mean, this is the elephant in the room, isn't it? Everyone knows that it happens, but no one is aware of it. And everyone is aware that it happens. But people say that, oh, it's life, you know, right? And you are not even surprised by it. And I'm surprised to see, not you all, right? I'm going to get good amount of blames after this sermon, right? I'm not offending any of you all, right? I'm not talking about you all for that, for a fact, because I'm talking about our past lives. We have been upgrading everything and we have been seeking pleasure and we thought we actually got it and we were satisfied for a brief amount of time as well. And for some time later, because everyone did it, that is why we were not clearly aware. So because when your best friend has upgraded their mobile phone, what happens to you? You are being ignited. Something happens to your... It runs a shiver down your spine. Oh, right? Oh, it's the new version, isn't it? Now you cannot stay without doing anything. You also have to upgrade. You also have to update and upgrade, and everything has to be changed. Looking for a change. Never ending looking for a change. Why? Because pleasure for some mind to experience pleasure, a pressure has to be released. If there are entities in this world, just imagine, right? If there were entities, can the pressure be released forever? Right? Pressure will be released to some extent, and thereafter, there won't be any pressure left. Therefore, you think that, okay, this mobile phone doesn't give me the pleasure that I require. It works fine, right? Not that it is fallen and it has got broken. If that's the case, then yes, then now you have a true valid reason for you to buy a new mobile phone. Maybe the same version. Why don't you buy the same version of the mobile phone? You always go for an upgrade, naturally. Go back and think about the life. Don't be ashamed, right? So that is why the honesty plays a huge role, the self-honesty. If these manifestations still occur within our minds, agree and acknowledge. Okay, now a deception is still there. What should I do about it? What should we do? Tolerate and reflect. That is the technique, nothing else. So when you are at the verge of releasing pressure, don't let it loose. Have your control. It will improve your Kanti Paramita, or the perfection of toleration. And it will force your focus from the deception to the truth. The technique will do that. Don't try to do it forcefully. The technique, what is the technique? Toleration. Toleration will get the focus on pleasure back to the truth, which is the pressure or the vexation. When the vexation is well emphasized, when it has become unbearable, now let the pleasure be experienced. Now you are focusing on the pressure. And what is the interpretation that you give? So this is the vexation that got released. It is not pleasurable. It is so vexatious. It is a pressure which got released. Do you like pressure? Do you like stress? Do you like to be stressed? No. But don't you like pleasure? I asked basically the same question. Did you understand that? Pleasure is a synonym for vexation, which got reduced. So if you can see pleasure as a form of vexation, which got reduced, detachment is going to happen. Detachment will happen, not will. Detachment happens at that moment itself, because that is wisdom. Ability to see pleasure as a form of vexation is the wisdom. Let the wisdom do its job. Don't try to forcefully detach. Let detachment happen through wisdom. Okay. For a mind who has experienced that amount of wisdom, now there's no, what you call, the segregation of levels of pleasure, right? The newest version is better than my version, right? Now there's a segregation. Now there's a difference, clear-cut difference. There are good products and there are not so good products. Depending on the level of pressure that is going to be released, there are luxurious cars and there are not so luxurious cars. Why? There's a segregation of pleasure. Why does this segregation occur? Why does this difference, or what you call the specialities? All of these are the product of entitification. Entities have differences, specialities. If there is something special about something, but you have to take note of, I am not mindfully aware. What? Yes. It is so hard to believe, but if there is something special about something, which is different to everything else, that is the cause of attachment. What we refer to as Priyamadura Subhava in Sinhalese. That is the cause of attachment. Yang loke piya rupang sata rupang ette satanna uppajjamana uppajjati etta nivisamana nivisati. If there is speciality, if there is value, or if there is some difference in this world, there takes place attachment and there resides attachment. Attachment takes place. Attachment is the effect of this belief, this view. And you can't control it, therefore. Because it's a product of the causes, you have no control over it. Attachment is the product of absence of wisdom or ignorance, the presence of ignorance. Therefore, when the ignorance is eradicated, or when wisdom is arisen, attachment cannot take place. That is when we call detachment happens. It is only a product of wisdom. Don't try to get detached from things or people. That never works. Detachment only happens through wisdom. Then let it happen. Don't try to force feed or forcefully do anything. Let it take you through the natural course of it. Okay, if that is the first level of deception, now, what is more pleasurable? The pleasure that is experienced in human world or in Deva world? Surely the pleasure that is experienced in Deva world must be an upgrade, right? Right? Isn't it? Chalum Maharajika pleasure must be a grand upgrade. What about the Thavatinsa pleasure? It's even higher. And costlier, right? In terms of merits. Likewise, Nimman up to Paranimitta Vasavatti, those six realms of the heavenly abodes, there will be upgrades. Then what about the Brahma worlds? They'll be even pleasurable. So that is, this occurs when you are seeking for pleasure. When pleasure is a real entity within your mind, when you are focused at the deception, these differences or these specialities occur within in your mind. When you see the truth, whatever the pleasure that is experienced is an amount of vexation which has got released. Then are you seeking for pleasure in the Brahma world? Then there's no difference. As far as pleasure is concerned, nothing else, right? Because if you're talking about Brahma worlds, they you may have heard that they consume they don't consume these heavy meals. What is the meal that they consume? Preeti and Sukha, right? Which are very light. That means they rejoice, and that is their meal. Their happiness itself is their meal. They consume on happiness. That doesn't mean that they are like, right? They don't consume on the other's happiness, right? Their own happiness itself is their food. But they will be still entitified in this mindset. But pleasure, as far as pleasure is concerned, all the pleasures are the same. There is no such thing as pleasure in this world. It is just a manifestation when the vexation gets released. With that mindset, there is no difference within the realms. So that's the first level of deception. What do you think about the second level? The objects, the deception of objects. For someone who believes in the concept of objects, they consider that object is a reality. What are objects? Anything for that matter. Any physical thing that you consider that you can see, that you can hear, that you can smell, taste, and touch. All these objects are objects which has all these senses, isn't it? Do you also believe in this? That is why, it's okay, it is perfectly fine to have these beliefs. Because we all do. That is why we come to this world. Right? It is nothing to be ashamed of. But there is something to be ashamed of. What is it? Not acknowledging that there is a twisted view of this truth. If you don't try to seek for the truth, then we consider that is something to be ashamed of. If I had that, I will be terribly ashamed. Because all my teachers and all my companions see the truth, but it's only me who cannot see the truth, then isn't that something to be ashamed of? Of course. But if I associate people who see the deception, if I only associate people who see the deception and only appreciate the deception, and the people who appreciate the objects, then am I ashamed? None of my companions are going to complain about the views that I hold, right? Then will I be ashamed? No. Now do you understand the gravity of associating ignoble ones? Because no one will guide you to the seeking of the truth. Why? Because they are bad. No, they can't. They don't see, then they are not even aware of the truth. Because what they consider is they have already seen the truth. According to their mindset. It's not that because they are bad. But if you are associating the noble ones, the noble companionship guides you to the truth. And it creates an environment to be ashamed of yourself. Sometimes it's so tormenting. Not stressful, but you're forced to seek the truth. That environment is truly conducive for someone who is very serious at their enlightenment or their release or the liberation. That is why all our teachers advise all of us to associate the noble ones. My words fail me to emphasize the gravity of it. Because the entirety of sasana depends on the noble companionship. Not just 99%. Not 99.9999%. Entirety of the sasana depends on the noble companions. The noble companions. Okay, so let's see through how do we visualize or we experience objects. As you all know, we see things, or let's say, now I'm going to be the Mara and tell you his teachings. It's going to be easy, right? There's nothing to be taught. Now, you see objects, you hear the sound of objects, right? You smell the objects, you smell the smell of flowers, right? You taste the taste of pizza or cake, and you touch the petals of a flower, the soft touch, right? Do I sound like the Mara? Not even closer enough, right? Okay. So let's see how this happens. Do we see objects? But sight happens. Although objects are not seen, let's say objects are seen for the time being, sight happens. How does the sight happen? You all know this. I'm not focusing on the part that the scientists have already revealed, because you already know that the light comes and hits on an object, and the light being reflected and it hits on the eyeball, blah blah blah. The retina, nervous impulse goes to the brain. Okay, you all already know that. All your science teachers have done well. Thereafter, what happens? All the scientists say the sight or the perception happens in the brain. Now, we don't say that the brain is not important. Brain is important. But afterwards, after the brain, there is a phenomenon called the mind. That's a process, which is a process. Now, scientists cannot observe this because not so far they have been able to, or I don't know whether they will be able to create any kind of process to detect this process, a process of the mind, which starts with rupa, with the phenomenon of rupa. When a rupa is formed, with the energy of Vibhaka. Vibhaka energy comes and it blends with the four great elements. How does it blend? That is how the scientists have described in great details. It blends with the four great elements as a source of energy, so light energy. Then the reflection, then the eyeball, the nervous impulse, everything is like a ripple of four great elements. Finally, it manifests it manifests as a rupa. If it comes through the eye, we call it as rupa, or the sight object. If it comes in from the source of ear, we call it as saddha rupa. Likewise, thereafter, this rupa get in contact with the root of the mind or the base of the mind. Through the contact, thereafter, what follows? Vedana, Sanya, Sankha. So all of these three altogether known as Nama. Vedana is the detection of something has been contacted with the root of the mind. So it is detected. So this detection is named as Vedana. Thereafter, identification happens. What has got contacted with the root of the mind? Is it a rupa rupa? Is it a saddha rupa? Likewise, the identification is called as sanya. This vedana and sanya gets an imprint on the nama gotra. So it's like a log of nama. Vedana and sanya gets logged in the nama gotra. Thereafter, this nama and rupa get combined. That is the response, which is secondary to the contact. So detection has happened, identification happened. Then the response, or there is going to be some action. What is the action? It's called sankhara. So in a basic level of the mind, the sankhara is the combination of nama with rupa. And with that, it affects to a vijnana or a perception. So this is how a perception occurs. This is the process of defilements? No, this is the... Which process? Aggregation. This is considered as the aggregation process. Why is it called the aggregation process? Where does the aggregation occurs? You could call that, so each and every step is a manifestation, which is a form of aggregation. Yes, that is true. But when the sight occurs, or the chakku vijnana occurs, that means the sight perception, when it occurs, there's no chance for a sota vijnana. That is the sound perception. When sound perception occurs, there is no chance for the chakku vijnana or a sight perception. So these are individual and discrete occurrences. Each and every mind is a discrete occurrence which is independent to any other minds. If that's the case, how do we experience objects? Right? Can you see this saucer? I can touch it while seeing it. You don't feel the touch, right? Shall I send it to you? Then you will feel the touch of it. You can experience all these five senses all at once, can't you? When you consume food, right? Don't you feel all of this at once? You can hear the sound of munching as well, right? That also creates an effect. Especially if you're munching on something like Yes, fries. It has a characteristic sound to it. If you don't get it, you don't like it. You can experience all of these five senses and you think they come from the object. For example, a piece of cake. The piece of cake has a sight. It has some colors. Now again, I'm being the Mara, right? It has a nice smell. Doesn't it have? It surely has a nice smell and it surely has a nice taste. More than anything, right? Now what has the taste? The piece of cake has the taste. Now let me stop being the Mara. How does the taste occur? First, piece of cake comes. Piece of cake comes? No. Not the piece of cake. Which rupa is it called? Rupa rupa, sadda rupa, gandha, rasa rupa. Right? Rasa rupa comes and gets into contact with the root of the mind. Then it creates Vedana, Sanya, or the detection, identification, action, which gives rise to the perception of taste. So that is how the perception of taste comes. So where does the piece of cake comes? There's no role for the piece of cake. Of course, the taste buds has to be induced. Then an electrical impulse or the nervous impulse will go to the brain and then only the rasa rupa will get created. So where does it get started? You may say that, okay, the piece of cake had the taste inducing whatever, right? The particles which induces the taste buds. So the taste that you experience, are they embedded in the piece of cake? Right? Sugar, for that matter. Sugar is very sweet, isn't it? Is sugar sweet? No? Are you sure? Then why do you like to have sweet then? Talk with your mind. Ask these questions and be honest to your mind. And answer to yourself. Don't answer to me. I'm not the one who asks these. I'm asking on behalf of you. So let me be you to ask these questions from your minds and expect the honest result, honest answer, response. The mind truly, within its deep corners, thinks and considers that sugar is sweet. And the piece of cake is very tasty. We are trying to get out of this deception. But one thing to be sure about is all these are discrete and separate events. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. They occur discreetly and they are independent events. Then how do we experience a piece of cake? Okay, let's draw this and be clear about. Now I'm trying to summarize what we have discussed, the aggregation process. This is the karmic strand. So when one of these karmic eggs hatches, it releases the karmic energy, resulting in rupa. Then vedana, sanya, sankara, vinyana. So for all these processes are fueled by the energy released through the hatching of a karmic egg. Then vedana and sanya gets an imprint into nama gotta, right? Let's say this is the log. This vedana and sanya, this gets logged. In each chitta is a row of this table. When the chitta decays, or when the chitta passes away, what happens to this each row? Does it get passed away? No, it stays. It doesn't decay. Rupang jirati majjana namagutta najirati. It doesn't decay. Namagutta doesn't decay. So what is this? Vedana and sanya means this is namagutta. Excuse me. Then what happens is, now why does a rupa occur? Because there's a root of the mind. Because there's some kind of a deficiency of the root of the mind. Therefore, most suitable karmic egg will be hatched. Likewise, there's a need for a different karmic egg. When it hatches, it doesn't disturb the four great elements. It creates a ripple in the Namagotta. And certain records, let's say, imagine this record, and some thousand and millions and billions of records will be selected, and they will be aggregated together. They will be clumped together in order to give rise to another form of rupa, which we called as the Dhamma rupa. And in fact, that also give rise to vedana, sanya, sankara and vijnana. Now what is that? Now this rupa is the effect of culmination of all this information. This vedana and sanya is just information, right? There's no rupa in it. Just a piece of data. Very simple form of data, like ones and zeros. When these pieces of information are clumped together in a certain order, now that is a meaningful information. Now, when one and zeros, when they are taken separately, is it meaningful? You know, computers work in binary format. When you get to, if you have a chance to look into the binary details or the binary data, it will be just ones and zeros. Will they be meaningful to you? No, nothing at all. But when they are clumped together, when they are aggregated together in a set of 8 bits, now it will be meaningful. For example, an 8-bit could code a letter A, for example, or a number, whatever. Now, letter A is meaningful than 1 and 0. Likewise, this rupa contains all the information of these namas. All these namas which has been imprints of previous minds which are now decayed. Now there are no minds. But these are not also the leftovers of the minds, because mind doesn't have any leftovers. Everything decays. This is just an imprint, or this is just a log. When these pieces of information are aggregated together, now it has all the information of those minds, of those details of the minds. Now, when that rupa gets contacted with the root of the mind, it also creates vedana and sanya. Then what do you expect? The same thing happens. What? This vedana sanya again will be entered as a separate record. So this vedana sanya will be inserted to this namagotta back again, allowing it to be aggregated later. But this vijnana or the perception creates a perception of all the effect of all those information. Now, this is how you perceive sight, sound, smell, taste and touch all at once. Because it combines or it aggregates this kind of mind, allows all these details to be aggregated together. Details of, what are details? Details are namas. Right? Vedana and sanya are called details. Details of these minds. Because they are logged on this log. When they are aggregated together, details are aggregated, thereby creating a perception of a accumulated experience. It's a cumulative experience of rupa, or the sight, sound, smell, taste and touch all together. Now, when you experience this, when you experience sight, sound, smell, taste and touch, you call that perception. What do you call that perception? All this all together. Excuse me for my bad handwritings. This is the object. The perception of sight, sound, smell, taste and touch all together. That is the object in your world. But when you perceive it, you feel as if the object pre-existed and I see it. Object pre-existed and I hear the sound of it. And I taste the taste of it. I smell it and I touch it. This is the deception. Now, let me ask you a very tricky question. What is the technique that Lord Buddha has asked us to do? Khanti paraman tavodi dikka. How do you tolerate here? Because previously, to exercise this in the first level of deception, you tolerated forcefully, physically, right? Not allowing yourself to indulge in pleasure. Because that surfaced, that emphasized the hidden vexation. Now, what is the technique of doing this? You can't do that? You can do it. But it's very tricky. You cannot do it physically, but you can do it with your wisdom. How can you tolerate not allowing yourself to view this as an object? Try and force your mind to perceive this as sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch, not as an object. But as a result of sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch, object will be perceived. There's nothing wrong with that perception. Is something wrong of this perception? Is there something wrong with the perception of pleasure? What do you think? There's nothing wrong with the perception. As far as the perception is concerned, pleasure is a truth. We don't say that it doesn't exist. A perception of pleasure exists. To that perception is what the mind falls for. That is a trap. How can one fall for if the trap is a fallacy? If there's no trap, what is to be trapped, right? There's no trapping if the trap itself is a fallacy. Trap is a truth. So what is the trap of pleasure? Perception of pleasure is the truth. Likewise, perception of an object is truly perceived. Don't you perceive so? Don't you perceive a perception of object? Yes. That is toleration. Stop and think that this is an object. An object has sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. No, that is release of vexation. That you release your mind to be, it's kind of pleasurable as well. Because when you try to break yourself from that cycle, when you try to stop that thoughts occurring in your mind, that will surface and that will emphasize an unimaginable amount of vexation. If you're so courageous, and if you're so keen, and if you're so wise, you will tolerate it. Then it creates the environment to reflect. Can you reflect without tolerating? Sometimes you might even try that as well. I will reflect after having this ice cream. Right? Have you done that? Have you done that? Have you been successful? Or tell me about it. I'm so sorry, ladies and gentlemen, to inform you that it never, ever is going to work. There's no reflection without toleration. Because it doesn't create the environment for the reflection to happen. Reflection is not something that you do. If you do reflection, you should be able to do it all the time. Don't you like to do reflection? Then do it. Can you do that? You have to create a conducive environment for the reflection to happen. What is most important thing is a pleasant environment. You have to be pleasant. If your mindset is unpleasant, then you cannot even engage in a merit. The environment or the mindset has to be very pleasant, as well as toleration without releasing vexation has to happen. That is the background for the reflection to happen. Do you understand why our Guru Thero says that this sasana or this pratipada or the practice is only for very courageous people. Can you imagine how courageous you have to be? Because this amount of toleration, you have never ever tolerated ever in your entirety of samsara. Because you are trying to win yourself. This is the most difficult thing to win. But you have won many battles. Incalculable number of battles you have won. But yourself, never even thought of winning. That is why we are still there. But now you are blessed to listen to the techniques of winning yourself. So having learned that, just by learning the techniques, does it mean that, now I have win myself. Because I know how to win myself. Don't fall for that trap. That was a trap which got trapped by Venerable Portila. Just the knowledge of the technique of liberation is not going to liberate you. Are these teachings nice to know things? Are these teachings nice to know things? It's nice to take note and write down on a book and keep it aside. I'm not insulting someone who takes note, right? It's very good that you take note because you can refer to it. But if you don't practice it, then I don't have to say anything because Lord Buddha has already told it to Venerable Portila. Right? What did he say? Bahum piche sahitam bhasamano natakkaro hoti naro pamantu gopo vagao ganeyam paresa na bhagava samanyas hoti. Someone who knows many things about Dhamma, about reflection, about how mind happens, it sounds like me, isn't it? Coming here and taking the opportunity of our Nayaka Thero, right? How dare he? I'm helping you to sound yourself. I'm just kidding. And after taking the opportunity of Nayaka Thero, he even dares to describe how the mind works. So just by knowing, just the knowledge doesn't do anything. That doesn't mean that knowledge is not important, because you can't reflect if you're not aware of it. Knowledge is equally important. But just with knowledge, it doesn't liberate you unless you put it into practice. What has to be practiced? Tolerate and reflect. Reflect and tolerate, or tolerate and reflect? There's no... You don't need to tolerate if you start with reflection. Because the vexation has already been released. What is to tolerate then? First tolerate and then reflect. In this case, what has to be tolerated? The urgency of the mind to release its vexation through the easiest path. What is the easiest path? Oh, it's an object, right? It has blue in this. When you touch it, you feel the touch. This is the release of vexation. This mindset is completely against the toleration. So what is to tolerate? Okay, I feel this as an object. How has the perception of object has come into being? Sight has happened beforehand. Touch has happened beforehand. Then all this information has been aggregated together. That is how the perception of object has happened. Now, is this an object? No. This is the reflection part only, right? What I can put into words is the reflection part. But having the huge break, tolerating, can I put this and put that into words? You have to do it within you. That cannot be explained. I can try to explain using words, but those are just words. That has to be practiced. Are you practicing right now? This monk looks like this, and this monk makes his voice and he produces sound, right? And I hear the sound that is produced by the monk. Is that the way how you interpret it? If that's the way, that's okay. But just be aware that is how this mind releases its vexation. Now, how can you tolerate? Not allowing the mind to go in that pathway. First, acknowledging this monk is a perception. Oh, how sad that has, how sad that is. Now that is the vexation, right? There's a resistance. There's a resistance to embrace the truth. That is the vexation that has to be tolerated. So tolerate it. You are doing fine. If you feel some resistance, you are doing fine with toleration. Keep on doing it. Do you still feel as a monk? Or are you able to consider it as a perception of monk, which happens right now, in this instant itself? Try to do it as you hear these words. If you are capable of doing this, that's a huge victory. It's a huge victory. This perception is secondary to the minds of sight and sound, which has occurred before. When all these details are aggregated together, it produces a secondary mind, or tertiary, or I don't know the number, right? This perception is only secondary to that, which is a perception of a monk, a person, an object. So, is this only true for this monk? What about all the other objects and people that you are surrounded with? So, how to tolerate? But don't do it weirdly in front of people, right? Then otherwise, I will get complaints. You can be very secretive. You can secretively do this all by yourself. You're looking at the exactly the same world, but in a different lens. Tolerate and reflect. And behave normally as usual. It's very easy to say these things. Right? It's very easy to say. Just try and say these things. Very easy. But try and practice this. You will know how much courage you should have. When you have accomplished coming out of this level of deception of objects, then, thereafter, you lose your ability to steal. Thereafter, you cannot steal. Just because the concept of object is only a perception. There's no value to it. You have lost the complete value that you have given to objects. You lose it completely. Now do you understand? That is the second precept. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time, but there are three other levels of deceptions. It's so amusing and it's very fascinating, this Dhamma, because it fits everything without any resistance. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. Everything fits so perfectly. Of course, this is the Dhamma of the perfect one. Who are we to say that? More and more you learn about yourself, it reveals and it proves perfectly that this is the teaching of the perfect one. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, try to surround yourself within a group of noble friends, noble companions. Then, of course, it creates the environment, suitable environment to try and even start this. Thereafter, that doesn't mean that if you're all by yourself, if you're all alone, that is even better than surrounding yourself with ignoble ones. Because the surrounding of the ignoble ones, you're more inclined to release the vexation. Not to tolerate it. That is completely against what the Lord Buddha has asked us to do. That is the training, right? So, in Pali it is called the Sikha, right? Sikha is a training. So, how he has asked us to train ourselves? Kandi paraman tapoti dikka. Isn't it a training? Yes, we train ourselves. We train our mind to understand about itself. In this training, being alone is way better than associating a group of ignoble ones. That doesn't mean that, oh, the Swami Mahansay asked us to be alone. I should get away from my family. That is not what I asked you to do. Make all your family members noble companions. That is what I ask you. Get them to engage in merits and get them come on 2nd of August and engage in that tremendously meritorious deed. And enroll themselves, engage themselves on the 4th of August, on Tuesday as well. And involve them. And let them enjoy it as well. Don't prevent them from enjoying it, because that is what they want. If they are very new, If you are considering them, if you love them so much, all your loved one deserves to experience the release or the liberation that you experience. So that is the way. So while engaging in merits, don't prevent them their opportunity to have an ice cream. Right? But if it is going to be your opportunity, not just to have the ice cream, but to enjoy the ice cream, that is up to you. Just remember that Kanti Paraman Tapodidika will be a technique only if you apply it on yourself. If someone else try to apply on behalf of them, it never works. Therefore, don't try to apply it onto others. Do not ever do so. That is not the noble companionship. That is another way of ignoble companionship. Because you know that you don't like it. No one else would. But you can remind themselves. without hurting their feelings. That is noble companionship. Or you can tell about yourself so that they get the view. I also should do that. Like the ignoble companionship was received to you. How it was received? Because your friend upgraded their mobile phone. Right? So that is how you got the ignoble companionship. That is when you thought, I also should upgrade my phone. I also should dress nicely. I also should eat some different food. I also should upgrade my car and my house and my... Not that. Okay. If Nayaka Hundra was here, he would have said that. Okay. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, be mindfully aware as much as you can. And don't let the mind release its vexation, because this vexation is so subtle, isn't it? You are not aware of this vexation as a vexation until you tolerate. If you start tolerating, then you feel, oh, how much of a vexation was it? Because that is the deception, isn't it? It's well hidden under the veil of deception. Deception has its levels. So we discussed today about two levels of those deceptions. Okay, on that note, I think we can conclude today's sermon. Let us all transfer all the merits that we have acquired by listening to these sermons and by engaging in all the merits that we have acquired today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be received in the Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas, upasikas, who since time immemorial have transferred these teachings and preserved these sublime teachings in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand, and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer these merits to all the members of the Mahasangha, which includes the chief prelates of all of the chapters, and to all of the monks who are present in all around the world. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to our Guru Swami Nvanse and all the other monks resident at our monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also transfer these merits and express our gratitude to all those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, inviting others to join them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deed, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits to all those who make great efforts to provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicine, and to all those who have contributed to the construction of the monastery. That includes everyone, even who have helped through by expressing their know-how and expressing their well-wishes. Let us also transfer these merits to them. And let us also transfer these merits to all our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, husbands and wives, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles and aunts, nephews and nieces, and our employers and employees, friends and acquaintances, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, and assisted us in any way, shape, or form. May through the power of these merits, may they all be healed from any physical or mental ailments. May they overcome to any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits to all the gods and deities, primarily the Sakadeva, who have committed to protect and fulfill the sasana. Let us also transfer these merits to our guardian deities, who always keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits to all our ancestors who have predeceased us, which includes everyone from those who have been our friends and family to us in this infinite long journey of samsara. Let us also transfer these merits to all the armed forces, including the police force, who have lost their lives in wars. Let us transfer these merits to all those who lost their lives at war, be they friend or foe. Let them rejoice in these merits that we have acquired today. Let us also transfer these merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities, reminding ourselves they have been our friends and families in this infinite long journey of samsara. Let us transfer these merits to them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, may they redeem themselves from the woeful planes and be born in the blissful planes. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And with the power and the blessings of all the merits that we have acquired today, let us witness the advent of many hundreds and thousands of arahants in this blessed land. And may through the power and blessings of all the merits that we have acquired today, may you and I become an Arhatun Vanse or Arhat Merin Vanse in this very life itself and in the era of this Supreme Buddha Sasana itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Raga ginnin midetva dvesha ginnin midetva moha ginnin midetva nibbana parama sukhayen sukheta taravetva nibbana parama sukhayen සුකේත තර වෙත්වා මමද සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝ නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුකේත තර වෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛේත තර වෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛේත තර වෙත්වා රාග ගිනි නිවේවා ද්වේෂ ගිනි නිවේවා මෝහ ගිනි නිවේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා තුන්රුවන්ගේ සූවිසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණපදෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝ නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුගත තර වෙත්වා සාදු සාදු සාදු.